Hello everyone, I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. It's 4:33 p.m. Eastern, the 17th of September 2020. And let's take about 15 minutes or 15 seconds, just a short break to kind of pull ourselves together. Okay, I have an interesting book here. It's called The Secret of Atlantis by Otto Muck, and a listener sent this to me. And in the Meyer information, if I remember correctly, and I haven't even had a chance to look this up, Otto Muck was a engineer in World War II for the Germans. And I think the Meyer information says that he was Plato in an earlier life. So he knew much about Atlantis from his previous life even. So it's a very interesting thing. I want to look at some general kind of Wikipedia information on Otto Muck, if we can. I'm kind of slow today, so you have to bear with me. Well, this is great Wikipedia, and if I was better in German, it'd be very helpful. We'll have to get more general information. I just remember that Otto Muck had a lot of inventions, mostly war-related inventions for the Germans. He was a very bright guy, and evidently he was Plato in an earlier life. And I'm just going to dive into it and start reading a little bit from the book. There's a word in the book called amphora, which is a tall ancient Greek or Roman jar with two handles and usually a narrow neck. So I had never heard of that word until I started reading this, and then I thought it would be good to pass that on to you. Atlantis, the enigma. Dreams found, experiences, questions, assumptions. This is the foreword of the book. And then I saw that scene, several amphorae embedded side by side, held against the wall of the boat. We're still wet. We had been ill from the sea. Two of the amphorae appeared intact after a few millennia. We're still closed, sealed. I thought that they contain olive oil or wine, which should already be much spoiled. The diver in the black clothes rubber raised the body and showed something even more precious. The head of a young Greek in bronze, covered by green scathing. The orbs of the eyes were not empty. The shell, the white of the eye, was the mother of pearl inlaid, and rainbow brown clipped from the shell a glossy black. The pupil was obsidian volcanic glass. Beside the head was a piece mechanical, mashed and yet fully anyway, also covered with green algae. A wheel similar to a large clock. I remember the feeling. I tried to include those objects. I felt admiration for the head and precious joy to identify the mechanical part, functional. However, also experienced a bit of irritation. Because obviously I came late, missed the timing of the withdrawal of these objects of the ocean bottom. Besides, I have my external regret. You know, I wonder if this has been translated into English using a tool like DeepL or something, because some of these word orders are very awkward. I have my external regret this because then the diver turned to me with a significant gesture. He opened his hand and showed me a small gold bar, made make no word, but to make me realize that for him, all the rest was of little importance, without comparable value. Instead of the stamp specifying the weight and fineness of the gold bar, symbols discern it. It seemed weird. One way or another, one small bar of gold made me remember a ceremony of a launching cornerstone, which usually buried some coins and a newspaper of the day. What tremendous chance out of range. This way, so I thought, once we were able to penetrate the very heart of the real city of Basel, the Temple of Poseidon. Well, I'm going to have to read a little more of this on my own and try to decode it a little bit. Boy, there's a lot here. There's just a tremendous lot here. In 1954, Otto H. Mueck published his first book on Atlantis. 2 years later was the published work. And then it gives the title in German. I'm not going to ruin the pronunciation. Well, maybe I will. Atlantis, die Welt, der vor sint Flut. Atlantis, the world before the flood. So this whole thing. Now they're speaking about Otto Mueck there. Introduction. Wow, this book is very unusual. Sorry about that. I kind of just dove in, jumped right in the water. There's some very interesting stuff in this book. I think it's going to be a book you're going to have to read and try to digest it for a while. I'll have to work on this a little bit more at a later time. But anyway, it's very interesting stuff. And so much of our history has been lost. And little gems like this book can help us put things back together. Some important points about feelings. We're going to talk a little bit about feelings. We're going to talk about the might of the thoughts, and then I'll move on to one of the contact reports. The feelings grow out of the thoughts. The feelings are life-sustaining. Feelings enable quick processing of internal and external stimuli. Feelings simplify things. That's one of the things that really stuck with me in this whole re-studying on feelings, is that the feelings simplify things. So if you're engaged in a complicated situation, sometimes stressful, the right feeling, the healthy feeling, will simplify things for you and probably bring in a little bit of calm. Feelings make life easier and bearable. Feelings allow the thoughts to discharge so they don't get too hot. You know, sometimes our thoughts get very intense. And if you have a healthy feeling, it will deliver power to the psyche. Whereas a negative feeling will deliver its negativity to the psyche, and it can damage the psyche. The feelings manifest slowly, whereas the emotions are brief, intense, and sometimes very dangerous. Emotions can trigger things like murder and manslaughter. So the feelings are of a long-lasting duration, and if they're healthy feelings, then they can be very calming and relaxing. And if we didn't have the feelings, we could become confused. So these thoughts are associated with this swinging wave that the Meyer case talks about. And when this goes out, it'll track things through some kind of interaction, and it can bring things back to you. Feelings are very important and are therefore also extremely useful. They should not be fought and eliminated. A lot of times, the males particularly will fight their feelings, and we shouldn't do that. It must never be forgotten or disregarded that feelings have an existential and thereby life-sustaining significance and function. That's page 104 of The Might of Thoughts. For which reason they are useful and must not simply be stifled and abolished, nor manipulated. So feelings help us deal with environmental stimuli. The feelings make life more bearable. Now, if you're having negative feelings, it's going to make life miserable. So that's usually when you're having your time of introspection and you feel a negative feeling, it usually came from a negative thought. And about 90% of the time, that'll be a thought you want to throw away. It'd be unhealthy. However, about 10% or less, I would estimate, you'll get a negative feeling that is worth thinking about or has value. I mean, you can't have a negative thought that has value. Sometimes a negative thought, like you get that feeling like you better slow down in traffic, the person in front of you is going to slam on their brakes or something like that. That can be kind of a negative feeling you get, but you shouldn't ignore all of your negative feelings, because you want to be in a neutral, positive, equalized, and balanced state. So if your thoughts and your feelings make you confused, well, that's not neutral, positive, equalized, balanced. You're disturbed if you're confused. Things are indistinct. You can't differentiate things one from another. You mix things indiscriminately. And that's one thing to notice, that if you're not being carried by healthy thoughts and feelings, you will mix things. Things will become jumbled. Things will become tangled. So the thoughts create the feelings, and the feelings influence the psyche. And then there's a feedback to the consciousness, so that further thoughts, which are of a conscious nature, lead to feelings that are of a conscious nature. So, however, if the thoughts are of an unconscious nature or triggered by unconscious perceptions or an unconscious recognition, then these feelings can affect you and these thoughts can affect you as well. So we have the conscious feelings and thoughts, and then the unconscious feelings and thoughts. So feelings at times can actually create and influence thoughts. But typically, there is a prerequisite. The thought must first be created, whether it is conscious or unconscious, so that a feeling comes into being. But then after that feeling comes into being, it can then spawn off thoughts. So we have an interdependency between thoughts and feelings. It's multi-layered. Psychiatrists and psychologists don't really understand all of this, the relationships between the thoughts and the feelings. And one of the biggest problems we face is problem-causing thoughts that occur automatically. We tend to narrow our frame of reference when we have negative thoughts. We're focusing on this one small negative thing. We're having these negative thoughts over and over again. And our thoughts have run out of control. And this is a cycle. it's automatic, and we have to use the wish dream. Think about something neutral, feeding your cats, playing with your cats, walking your dogs, sweeping the garage. Think of something neutral. It's kind of a wish dream. It's just something that can bring some calm. And that's what you're trying to do, snap out of this out of control cycle of problem causing thoughts. All of the human beings' thoughts and feelings are important, regardless of whether their nature is negative or positive, whether it is conscious or unconscious. Manipulation of the natural state of the thoughts and the feeling must never be attempted by thinking purely positive. So we don't want to think purely positive all the time. We want to be neutral positive. So, now, I would be very interested in getting more elaboration on what it means to manipulate the natural state of the thoughts. Because Billy tells us to tend and nurture our thoughts. So that's one of the things I've always tried to do, is tend and nurture healthy thoughts. Now, if you're tending and nurturing negative thoughts, which operate automatically, they can throw the whole psyche into turmoil. Automatic thoughts are very dangerous. If you ever feel yourself just having these thoughts occurring over and over again, occurring, those automatic thoughts are dangerous. That might be a good title for this show, Automatic Thoughts Are Dangerous. We need to consciously choose our thoughts and not allow these thoughts popping into our head. Sometimes I wonder about, you get some music stuck in your head and I don't even know if that's good. So one thing you can do is check when your feelings are getting disturbed. Because disturbing feelings are a sign that you've entered into a kind of thinking that is not good for the psyche. So each time these repeating thoughts move through the mind, they generate disturbing feelings. So we got to break the automatic thoughts. So then switch to the wish dream. Go into meditation, focus on something else, listen to music, go out into nature. You've had a success. If you've identified negative thoughts, that's actually a success. Think of it as a success. Because earlier, before you had any of this information, you may have been stuck in those negative thoughts for 20 minutes, made yourself miserable before you realized, whoa, wait a minute, I shouldn't be doing this. We can start thinking about some problems that we're having. We all have problems in our life that can generate this kind of automatic thinking. We need to examine which conscious or unconscious attitudes are causing our behavior. I wonder if some of these unconscious thoughts can make you feel tired at a certain time, like when you really have to go do something, but you 20 minutes beforehand, for some reason, you're getting really tired. I mean, is it your thoughts that are affecting your feelings and your feelings affecting your body? I mean, are we distorting reality here because we don't want to accept some responsibility? I bet I do that. I bet I've done that more than once. But we have to break the pattern of uncontrolled automatic thoughts. And again, meditation, focus on something else, listen to music, have the wish dream, recite some really pertinent Billy information outside, out loud, speak to your own consciousness, go out into nature. So we have to examine what conscious or unconscious attitudes are affecting our behavior. are causing our behavior. And this is challenging because it's difficult sometimes to immediately recognize the conscious or unconscious ideas. Now, Billy's talks sometimes about keeping a diary of thoughts and feelings. Never done that before. A lot of people do. Some of the unconscious thoughts can actually move to the conscious mind. So anyway, we need a kind of systematic self-observation. Many of our unconscious thoughts are problematic. And you know, our thoughts eventually crystallize in the circumstances in our life. We don't think of it that way. We think that the circumstances are kind of out of our control. But I think most of them are probably within our control. There are probably some maybe that are just kind of outside of our control. But I think generally speaking, your thoughts lead to the life you have. So if suffering comes into your life, that is typically from our mental disharmony. You know how we can have mental harmony. We can feel, I'm confident, I'm optimistic, I'm relaxed, I'm cheerful, I'm enthusiastic, I'm the master of my own destiny, I'm satisfied, I endure, I persevere, I'm calm, I do not allow my thoughts to drift on the ocean of life. So harmony is a relationship that's characterized by a lack of conflict. So you can have a relationship with yourself that has a lack of conflict or a lack of suffering. Disharmony includes discord, dissension, dissonance, unity, friction. Now here's a great passage on Might of Thoughts, page 142. I've let this go out of my memory. Lower thoughts form lower feelings, lower habits, and lower circumstances. That's all I memorized at one time I had. Such as alcoholism, hate, affliction, resentment, sorrow, grief, bitterness, errors of judgment, and so forth. So the lower thoughts form lower feelings. The lower feelings then become habitual, turn into habits. So you're having, if you're unsatisfied, that will lead you into the habit of probably not being motivated and not working hard enough. And that can bring other, even worse circumstances into your life. So if your thoughts are resentment and grief and bitterness and so forth, then they can, that can bring in the suffering in your life. If your thoughts are destructive, then they tend to crystallize into confusing and exhausting habits. And have you ever exhausted yourself just because of your own poor choice of thoughts and feelings? I've done that before. Nidar, the definition of lower, this is my wonderful little German phrase, Nidar Gedanken, formen Nidar Gefühlen, Nidar Gewohnheiten, Nidar Umständen. So that's lower thoughts form lower feelings, lower habits, lower circumstances. So the one leads to the other. The lower thoughts leads to the lower feelings. And then what if you have too many lower feelings, you'll get into lower habits. How do lower habits express themselves? Probably different in each person. One person may go out and drink alcohol. Another person may sit and vegetate in front of YouTube. And then, I mean, too much of that, you know, too much drinking can lead to bad health and bad situations in your life. So a habit is a settled or regular tendency or practice, one that's hard to give up. So if you're having negative thinking that's hard to give up, then that's an example of a bad habit. So I'll just read something quickly from Kelk der Wahrheit. And truly, when many amongst you human beings of earth look at yourself, you who live out in this wise and do not carry out the procreation act in full responsibility in every wise, but only for the sake of your lack of intelligence, sexual greed, and unconcernedness, then you delight in putting yourselves on par with apes, namely the bonobos and the chimpanzees, which only lie with each other for the sake of pure sexual lust. And they do this in a harmlessness to which you and your irresponsible acting do not come close. As a result of this, you amongst you who act in this kind and wise, you put yourself below the ape creatures, which act in accordance with the low development level that they hold. That's a strong slap from the Goblet of Truth. So, again, the lower thoughts, if you're thinking like a chimpanzee, then you'll start to behave like one. The lower thoughts start a whole series of effects that can end up in lower circumstances in your life. So, the definition of circumstance is the state that you are in. It's the details surrounding a situation, a condition. A lot of times we don't even realize the thoughts that led us to some negative circumstance. So you have to kind of trace back to get back to the lower thoughts and then the lower feelings that you had, which led to the lower habits. Anyway, boy, the time went quick. I don't know how that happened today, but that's very interesting. So focus on your thoughts, focus on your feelings, look internally, and if you feel yourself drifting into the negative, uncontrolled thoughts, think about the wish dream. You know, you're raking leaves in your yard, you're sweeping out your garage, you're getting a sense of you're getting organized, you're playing with your cats and or dogs, you're getting exercise. So put your mind somewhere else so you can begin to calm down and stop that automatic compulsive thinking. Anyway, hope you've enjoyed the show. You've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We'll catch you next time.